pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, it's not the Wednesday spot.
No, it's odd. We've only done the Wednesday spot once, and yet it feels weird to not be doing it again.
To not be at that Wednesday spot. Oh, God. Good times.
Now, I was going to say, the Wednesday spot does also sound a lot like a franchise of eating establishments popular with, like, Caucasian 50-year-olds.
Yeah, like it's right beside a Milestones.
Yeah.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
Wonderful. You are listening to Jaded Gamercast. I am drinking rum and ginger ale.
Interesting. I'm cleaning through my backlog of bacon maple ale, to be honest, because it's good, and it has been years.
Awesome. All right, so we are going to be doing a mailbag episode today, but let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. So, Nathan, why don't you start us off?
Sure. I built and primed everything I need for the Firestorm Armada tournament out of the basement at the end of the month. And I'm about half done my battleship, and then I just need to do up a carrier and some SRS tokens for 2 weeks from now. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Awesome. Yeah, that's not much to do, definitely. That's one of the joys of Firestorm Armada. I don't necessarily have to paint anything. I was thinking I might end up having to paint stuff if I went Dendrenzi, but I'm going to be playing my Omnidyne, so nah, I don't got to paint nothing. I'm in good shape.
Yeah, they're done.
That's right. So outside of that, I haven't been doing anything. That's pretty much it. I've been playing video games a lot, and that's kind of where it stands. I've been itching to get into my Planetfall stuff. I received my Works Raptor kit, and I really, really like the models. Like, I am more and more impressed with them every single time I see these models. And this one actually comes with an objective marker, which is cool, too. It comes with the Crashed Works Raptor escape pod.
Well, that's nice, because so, yeah. your directorate did not have... Yeah. Objective markers.
I will probably start painting them this week. I know that our buddy John Kingsway is finishing up his Ceruleans, and I think by the time he's done, he's going to be looking for some games, and I will be the only game in town for the most part, unless Matt gets his stuff done. So
literally,
I am going to be. I'll probably speed paint through them and see how I like them, but we'll see see what happens. But yeah, other than that, that's really all that's been going on. So let's move on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we asked you guys this week was, do you feel that defense platforms are a good addition to Firestorm Armada? It's not a very interesting question, so we don't get a whole lot of interest. Only 7 people voted. 6 said yes, 1 said no, but no comments. So, I don't know why they think they're a bad addition, but why not? It was probably just somebody voting against the flow.
Right.
You know, they're just like, we can't have 100% yes, this is bullshit, so...
Or maybe he was just like, I think Gunline Firestorm is crap, but as we've discussed, even when you're like, I play a stationary fleet, I deploy everything at a full stop, turn 2, every full stop
as
marker
we discussed,
comes off.
As we've discussed, but never posted. Remember, that was in the first time.
See, I can't remember this. I have a drinking problem. I mean...
There you go.
It's hard to know what made the episode, what was lost to the warp. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that we had talked about in the first recording, and it was actually part of the weekly listener poll question that I had on the first time around, but because we didn't necessarily have the time to complete it, the second time we went through it, for whatever reason, we didn't have a chance to talk about it, but one of the things with defense platforms is that it does introduce an aspect to Firestorm Armada that you don't necessarily see quite as much, and that is a gunline style, all stationary, all deployed, all stop style fleet. Terrans can get away with it. There's a couple other armies that can get away with it. And now that everybody has access to these defense platforms, which are great for just, hey, come toward me, the closer you get, the better. Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Now, I had said I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because of the fact that no matter what kind of stationary fleet you play, you do eventually get moving. Like, you just, there's no way that you can just stay stationary and never move. Maybe with Kadorians, but maybe with Keldorians. But for the most part, everybody has to move. Like, they standing still when your opponent is just getting into the perfect position is a death sentence. And especially against long range fleets, they tend to kind of trump the stationary fleets. So I didn't feel like it was that bad of a thing. Nathan, what was your view on it?
Yeah, my view was exactly that. I mean, yeah, like, I think stationary army and stationary play styles have a bad reputation because of 40K. When you ran into that stationary gun line, I literally will never move style of list, it sucked the fun out of the game. And so it's almost as if, like, hey, we've got this bad reputation going because in this other game, that was the mark of the douchebag.
Right.
But it just, it doesn't translate because, yeah, you absolutely have to move. If I'm going to remain stationary, you're eventually going to pull out of my arcs. You know, you're going to get behind me where now it's easier to blow my ships up. Like, it just, there are so many things about it where it's just like, you know, I might deploy stationary, but yeah, by turn two, turn three at the absolute latest, I'm pulling off every full stop marker so that I'm moving now. Right. Because I can't fight you, and you can just close the gap. I mean, frigates, like tier threes, are super fast, and you throw drives to max on, turn two, they're behind you.
Right.
Like, if drives to max plus a planet, any tier three, like, especially a Corvette that's going to throw a 20-inch move, turn two, they're just going to rip in behind you and, like, open up. So it's just, like, it's not feasible to play an entire game stationary. But that kind of play style would get more out of your defense platforms because, like you said, they're literally that unit of come closer to me. Things get better the closer you get.
Well, and, you know, with a game like this where you can folding space drive in a dreadnought if you feel like it, it really puts it – imagine playing a game of 40K where you're just like, I'm just going to drop a Bane Blade behind you. Oh, yeah, deep strikes. Like, it's that kind of aspect. If you play against someone that you know is all gunline, you do not have to march up the table. You can still put a full third of your fleet into reserves and have them folding space drive reserves literally on top of them. So that will typically happen turn two, turn three, but you have to kind of start planning for it depending on how your opponent is working. I mean, you and I both, when we play Firestorm Armada, we will almost always have at least one or two squads in reserves, whether it be flanking or folding space drive. And or what is it, shunt deployment. So it's one of those things where we're used to that. So if we run into the gun line, we don't really care all that much. It's not that big of a deal. We just kind of alter our strategy a little bit. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. I do think that, in the end, defense platforms are a good addition to Firestorm. So, hey, and 85% of everybody agrees with me. So,
I was going to say, of those six, you know, like, fuck two the naysayer. Yeah,
exactly. Thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jadedgamercast.com. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. So, let's move on to the models of the week. Models of the week being the rats, more rats, just all sorts of rats. Now, thankfully, I do like these quite a bit more.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. This should be interesting.
Yeah. You clearly disagree.
I do.
Which one in particular?
Thankful and Bone Ripper, I thought, were the only ones that were up on the 360 view that we were going to talk about.
Wasn't there another? Oh, no, no, no. We got to see the pre-release picture.
Yeah, I was going to say, the super awesome, like, fucking Terminator ogre rats. The Verminator.
Yes.
That is excellent. I can't wait to talk about those next week. But for this week, we have Thankful and Bone Ripper. So we had the Vermin Lord, who just never misses a gym day versus gastric bypass gone horribly wrong. I mean, like,
what I love about it.
Look at the size of that, like, that scar and those stitches up there.
This model is exactly what I asked for last week when we were talking about the Vermin Lord and how it was just not rat enough. This feels much more like rats, feels much more like Skaven. It's just a complete and utter abomination.
Tech Marines? I mean, I love his leg and all of his arms. And I mean, like, how does he pick things up? Like, do you think that
Why would he need to pick things up?
Do you think he has, like, a seeing eye rat to help?
Mouth, tail.
Yeah, but
I'm sure you can swap those out. Dude, they're like Borg hands. You just pick a new one.
Look at the end of the tail. That's not. Yeah. That's like another fucking little hitty mace thing. So,
yeah.
Oh my god,
it's so dumb.
Oh my god, yeah, and that's exactly it. Is like every single bit of this model can be summed up as it's so dumb.
But I love it. It's just it's a complete catastrophe. But
you are correct.
Being ridden by a Skaven, right? And I love the weird stone horns as opposed to, like, the standard horns. I think that actually looks pretty cool. I love the fact that it's just Johnny Skaven, and this is just a ridiculous...
Thankwell is fantastic, okay? Oh. Thankwell has a great staff. He has fucking warpstone horns, which is great, instead of... Like, to me, the warpstone horns are making fun of the Verminlord horns, and I love it. I think that it's hilarious.
So have you noticed the physics failure on this model?
The fact that his shoulder cape is blowing one way, but the rest of it is blowing the other.
Blowing the other direction.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yes.
Hey, guys, look what we can sculpt. Yeah, make it so.
Hey, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. It's just too goofy. It's exactly what I think about when I think of Skaven, and that is just Rat Ogres and Hellpit Abominations, and I think this fits much better with the army as a whole than the Verminlords do, where it's just the 12-pack abs.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. This looks like they wanted something that was going to be equal parts Rat Ogre, equal part Hellpit Abomination, which is why you just have miscellaneous random stitching involved. But it's just like... When I look at it, there's just so much that I dislike about it. Like the smoke. Why do we have the smoke incense coming out of his gigantic, as tall as the dude riding him, shoulder spike? For no reason. Like I said, why did they replace the end of his tail with like a little mace attachment?
Oh, I'm not saying it's perfect.
All of his arms, guns. Like, I'm just like,
well.
Everything is just the question why. I mean, don't get me wrong, this is a better Bone Ripper than the last one, all right? Like, this is the same thing we said about the Verminlord, better than the last model. But even then, I could forgive the guns because I love the Verminators and I can't wait to see the 360s on them next week. But the one bit that just fucking ruins it for me is the hydraulic leg. Like, seriously, like, did they steal it from the dwarves? Did they enslave dwarves to make him a hydraulic leg? It's just been this good, like...
It is absolutely the most unnecessary part.
Mechanicum levels of technology on random Skaven dude for no reason.
Yeah, I will agree that it is the most ridiculous, out-of-place portion of the model.
And there are a lot to choose from.
There is a lot to choose from, by all means, but... Yeah, it just, I don't know, I like it. That's all. I can't, it's just stupid. And I guess that's what I like it. It's exactly what I asked for. And I'm just like, well, that's why I don't play Skaven. So, thankful and Bone Ripper. That's the winner right there. Okay, so, all right, let's move on. We got a lot of questions to answer. We're doing a mailbag today. We asked you guys to send us your questions. Only one person actually sent an email. The rest of you just commented on the poll, or not the poll, the Facebook page, which is totally fine. We'll still answer those, but I'm going to go ahead and go to email first. This one came from Steve. He says, why has nobody made a Blood Bowl-style hockey game yet? And are we as a community obligated to fix this? All right, well, it's starting good. I can't even read. Why haven't they made a Blood Bowl-style hockey game? Because it would be stupid. And as a community obligated to fix this? No, I'm an Oilers fan. We don't fix anything.
Touche.
There you go. That is my answer.
Yeah, I was going to say, truer words have never been spoken.
Nope. We just think back to when it was great. Stanley Cups.
Think back to when it is great and then hold press conferences to talk about how all the players are fucking it up.
That's pretty much it. Woo. Oh, this is the players' faults. We'll get rid of them.
Yeah, well, we're not going to get rid of him. Let's not be hasty.
Hey now. Taylor Hall, first-round draft pick. Nathan, your view. I don't like Blood Bowl. I don't like sports games as tabletop games. I think that they're boring. I think as soon as you start playing sports games, I just want to go watch a hockey game. I'm not actually going to want to play.
Warhammer
is its own thing because I can't go watch that. I've seen Lord of the Rings too many times.
Exactly. No, and that's exactly it is. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of Blood Bowl, and for much the same reasons, I've never been attracted to Dread Ball or, like you said, any miniature-based sport game.
Yep.
You know, and it doesn't matter how much you try to put a fantasy or futuristic slant on it. It really doesn't appeal. So, yeah, the idea of we as a community try to make a Blood Bowl hockey game. Who the fuck would skate in the old world? Can I ask this question? Like, you know, are we going to say that they totally skate in Bogenhofen? Cause like, let's be honest, it's Kislev and it's the Chaos Wastes. No one else can. I mean, this is like women's hockey at the Olympics. Canada's going to win the gold. Sweden and the U.S. can fight for silver. Like that is what the Blood Bowl thing would be. So are we just going to say that Kislev wins? Like, I don't know where we're going with this.
Well, Kislev is the only one that has ice magic, so they would be the only ones able to, like, create a rink wherever they go. So unless it's a Kislev away game, nobody's going to be able to play.
Right?
That's right. So, it's a dumb idea. I don't like Blood Bowl. I don't like sports games. I don't like Dread Ball. Like, none of those things hold any interest to me whatsoever. And I think for the most... there it is. For the most part.
All right, just...
Keeping it classy. Yeah. fuck off. Yeah, for the most part, I don't see any reason to it. It just doesn't resonate with me, and I think the majority of tabletop gamers, it doesn't resonate for it either. There's always going to be this little group of people who think it's just hilarious. I think the best experience I ever had with Blood Bowl was when I was maybe going to play it, when a guy who I was working with at Games Workshop was running a league that they would do every week, and then he would write like a newsletter that was laid out in the manner of like a sports column talking about like what happened that week, with all the different games. Very role play esque, but it seemed like it was a lot of fun. But then it became abundantly clear that they weren't accepting anyone else in their league, and I was like, well, I'm just gonna throw this hobbit fucking for the. Like, I bought a whole hobbit, halfling, sorry. Halfling Blood Bowl team never fucking played the game once.
Aww.
There's just no point in it. So I was just like, nope, fuck it. I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yep, there we go. All right, so let's move on to the next. We're going from the comments on the post now. So Adam says, to what extent is immersion an important aspect to your miniature wargaming? Nathan, I'll let you take that one first.
Okay, I don't really think that... See, to me, immersion is just like have your shit painted. And it's weird, but it's just like for me, the imagination and the immersion comes from I've got my painted army, I'm playing against your painted army, we're on a nice board with decent terrain, it's everything's painted, and that's how I can immerse myself in it. Because again, like if we look at 40K, 40K is probably my favorite science fiction universe and setting in existence of anything that I've read. I think that it is so beautiful and rich, and yet that doesn't add or detract any enjoyment of actually playing 40K for me. And it doesn't make, like, reading Black Library does not make me want to sign up for a 40K tournament. So I don't think that that immersion is necessarily there from that perspective. But being a miniature wargamer who is, you know, so used to painting and playing with painted models, that's where that immersion comes from for me. Kyle at Imaginary Wars years ago said it best when he said, hey, when everyone's got their stuff painted, it's like the greatest movie in the world going on in my head. And that's what immersion in miniature wargaming is for me.
For me, immersion is very important because I have to legitimately care about the setting that I'm playing in. And that goes back to that Blood Bowl question.
And also, how was your 2014 New Year's resolution of War Machine coming along?
I said that was for 2016. You don't remember. You were too drunk. So,
well, it's not like I could dispute it.
There you go. So basically, yeah, for me, immersion doesn't come down to like, oh man, I'm in it. I feel like I'm on the table. Nothing like that. For me, immersion is I have to believe it, I have to buy into it, and I have to enjoy the background, right? If I'm immersed in a game that I'm playing, I will read up all the fiction, like I've done with Firestorm Armada, where it's just like, oh yeah, I'll tell you all about all these different guys. Like, I'll sit down and read their website and, you know, figure out what the Ceruleans are all about. But when it comes to a lot of games, is it important? Yes, it's kind of the most important thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have that interest and I don't feel like it's worth getting immersed in, I just don't play it, right? Like, what was another game I was supposed to get into and play, and just nothing about the world caught my interest whatsoever. I think it was back when you and I were talking about getting into, I think it was Infinity. And you liked it. You were like, ah, yeah, I love the story, and there's this, that, and the other thing. But I just couldn't get into the world. Like, I just couldn't grasp, you know, like, the story or find the hook that I could really...
What if Japanese manga went on forever and colonized the stars? That's all you need to know. It's Infinity.
Yeah, but I can watch that, but with tentacles.
Touche. Listen, if they get a tentacle faction, I can pencil you in then.
Actually, I might actually go full ham on that. All right, so let's move on. Adam put another question on there. We'll come back to it if we can. Kieran says, if the rumors are true about 9th edition scrapping the established previous
editions. He did write scraping, though.
I know. Scrapping the established previous 8 editions and several decades of Warhammer canon and reinventing the entire world, should GW rename the game? Should a new world and playing style be refitted and Warhammer be shelved to its GW's growing list of games deleted for no reason but to help push new products, i.e. Battlefleet Gothic, Necromunda, Warmaster, and Epic. Battlefleet Gothic, Necromunda, Warmaster, and Epic were shelved because they weren't that good. Sorry.
Yeah, you know, and that's
I get it. I liked Battlefleet Gothic.
I was going to say, notice how he doesn't mention Mordheim, which was shelved alongside all of them.
Oh, yeah, I know. He also says, please note Blood Bowl was not mentioned due to the fact that it was a failed abortion to begin with. Yes, thank you, Kieran.
God, there's a lot of Blood Bowl questions up on this episode.
Just that demand for Blood Bowl, man. Now, you know, let's answer the first part of this. Scrapping the previous 8 editions, should GW rename the game? No. There's no reason to rename the game. It is always going to be Warhammer.
Absolutely. It is Warhammer, and it's not that they're retconning or doing anything to the previous 30 years of established fiction. They've just decided for the first time in their history that they're pressing play. You know, the Doomsday Clock isn't set, you know, isn't stopped at 11:59 the way it is in 40K. They've straight up said it struck 12. You know, the apocalypse happened, and, we're going to fast forward a couple hundred years post-apocalypse. You know, so, I mean, I like it. The setting is still mostly present. Mm-hmm. We definitely have to wait and see. Honestly, I have never been this excited for established fluff before. You know, like, I'm enjoying the End Times books for the fluff that's there. I haven't read 40K rulebook fluff since 4th edition because, you know, when they released, you know, when the 13th Black Crusade killed Eldrad and then they just brought him back in the next codex, you're just like, oh, they don't give a shit. They're just, nothing will ever change. What's the point? But this is exciting. So I'm actually really interested to see where it is that they can take this setting and make it more interesting than just, it's the 1400s with fantasy races.
If they were doing it with 40K, I would be more excited. Unfortunately, Warhammer, I honestly don't care one way or another. If they rename the game, we will all still call it Warhammer. Like, if they rename it stupid like Gates of Antares, like, we're still going to be like, Warhammer. Like, it's just, it's not going to...
For example.
It's still going to be Warhammer. It's still going to have the same stuff. It will be 9th edition Warhammer. It doesn't matter what you call it.
Yeah.
Regeneration, Revengeance.
Yeah. And, you know. And a lot of the rumors so far talk about how the 9th edition mechanics are still going to be very similar to the 8th edition mechanics. And I like that because, in all honesty, 8th edition is still brilliant. Like, the game mechanics for 8th edition still work. Like, are there issues where they kind of needed to tweak things to make other, you know, to make certain builds or options more viable? Of course. But from a fundamental core game mechanic perspective, it still works. It still makes sense. So I'm happy that they're building on that and then tweaking it to fit this new setting / fix issues. I mean, this isn't 40K. Where after a year and a half, they had to release a new edition just to fix the shit they fucked up, and then fuck up more along the way. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, to the second part, should a new world and playing style be retitled and Warhammer shelved? No, it's not going to get shelved. It's one of their flagship products. Warhammer and Warhammer 40,000 make a lot of money. Obviously, 40K makes more. And it's one of those things where what they're doing is they're creating something new for existing players. However, Warhammer is also even worse than Warhammer 40K in the sense that there's just all these old guys saying, I don't play anything past 4th. You know, like, it's just...
Or even then, they'll play the new rules, but they'll literally not buy anything. And, you know, I'm not going to name names, but there are several people that I know personally who haven't bought anything since, like, 5th or 6th edition other than new rules.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, I totally understand the impetus from Games Workshop to say, hey, we really like this game, we think we can make the setting more interesting, and we can release a set of rules... that's not necessarily going to force people to buy new things, but might actually attract new people. I mean, that was probably the fundamental decision behind End Times increasing Lord and Hero slots to 50% was buy less models. Like, come get in. Get into this game, and instead of having to buy 200 models, because fantasy was always huge, you can just buy fucking this guy on a dragon, this wizard on a dragon, and two blocks of cavalry and Bob's your uncle. Like, it just, you know, there has been a push towards getting people to start playing Warhammer. Because, honestly, since we played fantasy a lot in Alberta here, in our local region, can you name a single new player in that entire time? It was always the same people at tournaments. They might do new armies. You played Lizardmen this tournament, now you're playing Ogres, but can you honestly name a single new player in 5 years of 8th edition?
Like, vaguely?
Maybe
like,
one.
It would have been, like, Warhammered, and I was super drunk, and this was, like, 2 years ago, but I remember Paul bringing a guy up saying, like, hey, this guy's just getting into it, and he wants to know how you pan your army so fast, and, like, that's the only time I can remember. It's just some guy I've never met who was like, hey, he's getting into it.
And I'm very inebriated.
Exactly. I was exceptionally drunk.
But, like, you know, but that, to me, has always felt like the problem with Warhammer is those that love it fucking love it. And we bought armies, we played, we'd buy new armies, we'd optimize, we'd add 10 more guys to this unit, we'd do all of those things. But no one else did, unlike, say, 40K, where I could look at it 5 years ago when I was hitting every 40K tournament here, I knew everyone. And now I can walk through and just be like, oh, I know Jordan. Yay, that's one. Holy shit, guys, I know one guy here. Like, 40K is always bringing new people in. Warhammer wasn't. So, again, I'm interested. I hope it works. We'll see.
Yeah. Brian says, I think it would be safer to make it a new IP. I mean, when it goes gangbusters like The Hobbit did, we will all need it. We will all be needing to keep our shit straight. I don't think that's the case. We're still going to call Warhammer. That's just it. It doesn't matter if it has the same armies, and we're using the same books, and all of our old army books, which we know are not going to get replaced anytime soon, continue to say Warhammer on them. We're still going to call it Warhammer. If they completely got rid of everything and put out like a full-on release, you know, like the rumor is there's only going to be 5 or 6 armies.
Mm-hmm.
If they were just like, right, so here's the new edition, here's all 6 books.
Okay, hey, Lang.
It'll never happen.
Question for you.
Uh-huh.
What is the name of the 40K army that is made up of normal-ass humans with lots of tanks?
Imperial Guard?
Yeah, and that's exactly why there's no point in renaming that shit.
Oh, right. Astra Militarum. That was really good. That was clever. That was real clever. Virtual high five for you, friend. Yes, Imperial Guard. Call them whatever the hell you want. They are still Imperial Guard and Adeptus Sororitas and all that kind of crap. Yep, we get it.
I was going to say, you can change the name as much as you want, but we are going to keep calling them what they're called.
I thought there was a trick in here. I was like, I don't know what's going on. All right, so next question.
No trick question, just like...
From Liam is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how jaded do you guys think you are? That's an interesting question, Liam.
I'm not
Go
jaded.
Go fuck yourself. Now,
One?
Jaded? You don't think you're jaded?
No, I mean, I'm all rainbows and... sunshine, and just fast forward to this point.
Nathan's a 5.
I said about Thankful and Bone Ripper.
That's right. I didn't used to be as high as I was. I think I'm at an 8 right now.
See, for me, I think it depends on the game. I mean, when it comes to Firestorm, I'm only like a 4. Like, I give Spartan the benefit of the doubt. I think the game is good. I think they mean well. When we're talking Games Workshop, it's like minimum 8.
I just think it's like an 8 in general. I'm the kind of guy who gets out of movies and starts picking it apart, and then somebody will say, like, I don't know, I liked it, and I'll just start ruining it for them. Like, it's just, I don't know. I can't. There's a lot of things that I enjoy, and I enjoy being jaded about, and that just brings that scale up there. So, no, I can't necessarily say that I'm on the lower end.
Oh, yeah.
There's that twinkle of hope, which is why I give myself an 8, and yes, there is stuff that we enjoy, but even as much as we enjoy Firestorm Armada, we still bitch about it all the time, where it's just like, what the fuck were they thinking with this goddamn Directorate defense platform? This is the stupidest fucking year, you know?
Well, that's because it is.
It is!
God, that's certainly not helping. You know, that despite the fact that Spartan Games is making games that we enjoy with models that we like and we enjoy painting, my God, can they fuck up the business side of their business. So, yeah, I'm probably an 8 as well. I mean... I tried to play coy a little bit, but
now what's the point? So Andrew says, do you think that the End Times is the state of the company rather than just their latest marketing line?
Hey-o.
No.
Hey, all right. I guess there you go. Lang, ladies and gentlemen. No. No, I don't.
I'll expand on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's the End Times for Games Workshop, because at this point, they are, despite everything, they're still cash flow positive. So, I mean, even though we've seen a 40% decrease in sales, they're still selling. They're still making money. They're still paying dividends. So, just like, as much as we want to hammer on Games Workshop for their idiotic business decisions and their head-in-the-sand attitude to a lot of market trends... It's not the End Times for them. I stand by my BlackBerry statement. I don't think that Games Workshop will be around in 15 or 20 years. But for the short term, they're fine. And they have such a phenomenally rich IP that all they need is a smart executive that can actually guide the ship correctly and stop it from sinking. Like... They're not past the point of no return. They're not in trouble right now. They're not filing for bankruptcy.
Right.
Definitely not.
Yeah, the biggest part of it is that they have a phenomenal IP, and it's theirs, and no one's going to take it away from them, and it will always make the money. Because of the world that they've created, the manner in which that they've molded this IP, you have to look at all aspects of the company, right? It's not just Warhammer 40K models and things of that nature. They're still selling paints, they're still selling brushes, they're still selling all this extra stuff, and they're still selling books. Black Library is still very, very profitable because of the fact that, you know, you've got this phenomenal series that's been going forever, and they continue to build on it, they continue to work with it. You still have companies like Forge World off to, sorry, let me finish this. You still have companies like Forge World off to the side that are still working off that IP and making money.
Yeah, and that was the point that I was going to make, is the Horus Heresy series is the number one most successful book series Black Library has ever published. I mean, there are 31 serialized novels, not to
mention... I'm just about done with book 4.
Hey-o! I'm halfway through book 31, yeah! Not to mention the fact that they've still got, like, 50-odd short stories, audio dramas, etc. Like, this is clearly the well that they keep going back to, but it's for the most part good still. So that's fine. But even beyond that, Horus Heresy now is basically... Or Forge World is basically just Horus Heresy Marines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they like, when is the last time you have seen them devote any resources to something that isn't 30K Marines? Because it's been years. Like, it's probably been a year or two, and even then, for a little bit, they're just like, we're updating all of our
Xenos books. While, but yeah.
Well, and I mean, like, they've dumped Warhammer Forge. Mm-hmm. They basically gave all of the Warhammer Forge rules for free on their website just recently, I think in the last week or two. So it looks like they're pulling all of their Warhammer Fantasy, which could have to do with the end times and the change in setting, etc., with 9th edition, or it could be that it's just nowhere near as profitable as Horus Heresy, because even then, I think the last Warhammer Forge update I got was, like, Chaos Dwarf Infernal, like, the Kadai Fireborn.
Oh, yeah.
And that was still, like, a year and a half ago. So it's just, like, you know, Games Workshop could shut its doors and just leave Black Library and Forge World around, and it would still be a multi-million dollar company. Mm-hmm. So it is not the end times.
Multi-million?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely could, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Primarily Black Library.
Well, again, Black Library, Forge World, and then all they would need to do is get some smart licensing agreements.
Well, and that's really the big part of it, is that the other thing I wanted to talk about is adding on to what you were saying about someone to drive the ship. They have a phenomenal IP that they continue to use inappropriately.
Yep.
And they go to these ridiculous small companies, and they say, oh, yeah, you can go make a Fire Warrior game, or, oh, you can make a Space Marine game. THQ was the biggest company that they ever had build a game for them.
And THQ went bankrupt. So
THQ went bankrupt. And then EA built a game for them. We all know how fucking good EA is, right? It's one of those things, well, EA didn't build it, but you know what I'm saying. Like, It's one of those things where they have this great IP, and actually, I was going to record a Let's Play.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had got my hands on, during the Black Friday Steam sale. Where is it? There we go. Warhammer 40K Storm of Vengeance is a newly released tower defense game.
I've never even heard of
with
that.
With the Warhammer logo on it. It looks fucking terrible.
Oof.
It was on a couple top 10 worst games of the year. I've looked at the video. It looks awful. I'm going to play it. I'm going to record it. That's the hope. But holy shit, who greenlit this? Like, who said, hey, great, go for it?
Well, and
of all the things for Games Workshop to just be like, you know, just let them do their thing, you know? Like, it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
No, you're absolutely right. Because, like, let's talk about 40K Online.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody, let's greenlight a free-to-play MMO.
Yep.
By a company that has literally never released a game before. Great news. This is our flagship IP. Let's do it. Like, I don't understand why they're not licensing
it. It's the Boys Club.
Oh, I know.
That's all it is. It's somebody's friend in the UK. I mean, it's...
Listen, my nephew has a company. He makes games.
He makes games.
Let's just make it happen. No, but I mean, like, that's the thing. We're just like, are you telling me that you could not license a AAA title? Like, you couldn't throw money at a studio...
Right.
To make a AAA title for you? Like, fuck off. Of course you could. And are you telling me that when we had a, like, 7-year period where everything was a fucking first-person shooter clone, whether it was Call of Duty gray skin versus brown skin, mm-hmm. versus gray and brown skin. I mean, that's when they changed it up, okay? When the textures were both gray and brown.
Whew. No one saw it coming.
Nobody. I mean, like, fucking revolutionary. Mm-hmm. You telling me you couldn't have made, like, a Call of Duty clone using Imperial Guard?
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, the closest we've come to a AAA title was Space Marine, which was, in and of itself, a great game.
Mm-hmm.
Had it been, and it would have been a phenomenal game had it come out 3 years earlier, because it was the best 3-year-old third-person shooter released that year.
Well, and that's a big part of the problem, right? Because even if we go back to, like, Dawn of War, it was so far past time for those RTS games where it was like, yeah, people don't want to play this game. They can just go play StarCraft. Like, you're building something for a flooded market right now.
Well,
what makes you think this is going to be successful? Now, it was the most successful game that they put together, but still wasn't a great game.
No, but, like, even that's the thing, is, like, the mechanics of Dawn of War were clunky compared to, like, Command and Conquer Red Alert, and you're just like, but Red Alert is 10 years older than this game. How is Red Alert a better RTS than this?
If, like, only Dawn of War had live-action cutscenes.
Oh, I forgot about that. Mm. Oh, Command and Conquer.
Oh, my God.
But that's exactly it. So it's just like, it is not the end times for Games Workshop. Should they ever get executives who have a fucking clue about how the 21st century runs and how business in the 21st century should be run, instead of a bunch of fossils who are still running it like it's 1987, the company will be in phenomenal shape again. But, you know, as it is right now, they're not actually leveraging the most valuable part of their business, which is idiotic. But, hey, I guess I'm just some fucking idiot on the internet that bitches
primarily
about things.
Is, yeah, that's primarily what it is. So James says, how would you make the current Dystopian Wars rulebook readable? I think he said it multiple times. Hire an editor.
Yeah, I was going to say, start again. Oh my god, the Dystopian Wars rulebook, not even counting the spelling and grammar errors, just the fucking layout is abysmal, because it doesn't even flow you through a game turn. It just jumps between whatever, like, fucking lithium-fueled fever dream the writer was on at the time, where he's like, it totally makes sense to go from here to here. Like, oh, it's fucking atrocious. Yeah, you need to hire an editor. That is Spartan's biggest downfall. Like, the fact that you said the FAQ for Planetfall was mostly, we totally get we wrote this one Mar out four times.
And you, each time we wrote it,
time
it was different.
Was different. So please use the one located on page, blah, 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 and ignore the other three. And you're like, Jesus Christ, guys, really?
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. I mean, simple spelling mistakes, pictures, just the wrong pictures in the wrong places. Like,
yes,
it's fucking crazy. I mean, the types of mistakes that you see Spartan Games make when it comes to their rule books is just unforgivable, in the sense that these are simple mistakes that, were you in school handing in a project, your teacher would just be like, no, we're done here. Like, that's it,
well,
right?
Well, yeah,
but
and
this
I mean,
is
like,
what they're putting
is,
out,
like,
is
you know,
like a product, a finished product.
Planetfall would be like, because, like, Terry was notorious for this throughout all of university, where it's just like, she would never proofread any of her papers, so she'd hand it in, she'd get it back from the professor, you know, and they were almost always, it's like, B+, would have been an A+, but please proofread, and it was all just spelling and grammar shit. And that's Spartan. That is Spartan Games' rulebooks in a nutshell, except for Dystopian Wars 2.0, which would literally just be a D-. Like, it's just, listen, I can play the game, sure, but my god, did I need to read this a lot, and then just trial and error it, because what you wrote makes no sense.
At first you were talking about ships, then you start talking about carrots, I don't know what the fuck's happening, who is Jim, like, why is he here?
Right? So, I mean, like, that's the big thing. How would you make Dystopian Wars rulebook readable? Literally start over. Start from scratch. The thing, like, you could not run an editor through what they printed and released. You would just have to start from scratch.
So Devin says, how do you guys feel about the Tomb King's army book apparently being out of print? First I've heard of it.
Yeah.
I'll assume it's correct. I'll assume Devin is a soothsayer. yeah, you know, it doesn't surprise me. We know that 9th edition is coming down the pipe. We know that they're going to be trimming a lot of the fats. And with much of what we're seeing for the End Times books and things of that nature, it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever if they just folded the Tomb Kings into Undead as a whole. And then that's pretty much where it ends. I think the Nagash book is a great precursor to exactly what you can expect to see with regards to Tomb Kings. They've always been the redheaded stepchild to vampire counts anyways, so that's not a surprise.
Touché. Yeah, and I mean, like, that's the thing is, again, when you look at the End Times, we saw them get merged together. I wouldn't be surprised if the vampire counts thing was also done. But even then, yeah, you have to look at timelines. We know 9th edition is 2015. We know it's this year. And didn't 7th edition drop in May instead of the typical summer slot of July?
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, like, we're looking at it, we're 4 months out, potentially, of a new edition, and if all of the rumors are correct, and I see no reason to doubt them, because it's not like it's one guy saying, no, guys, the world's been destroyed, and there's going to be six armies, and there's going to be, like, fantasy space marines, and everyone else is just like, what the fuck is he talking about? But, like, every single rumor source everywhere is saying this is new fantasy. So let's walk with it for a little bit. There's only going to be six armies. Well, of course we're going to get a new just army book Undead. Mm-hmm. There was no reason to split it up anyway. It was this, like, you know, we're going to get army book elves. Like, because it just, again, there was absolutely no reason for us to have three elf armies. Because it was always, you know, what special rule do you want?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go so far as to say there was no reason. Because I think when you look at the armies as they stand right now, they were very much different, right? Like, I mean, dark elves and high elves, yeah, okay, they had similarities, but for the most part, there was a reason to have them there because they were interesting and it was a different change of pace. And back in those days, releasing armies was great because army releases made money. Yeah. So why would you?
High elves and dark elves were different because they were different in the fluff. Right. Because we always said, pick your flavor. It didn't matter. Did you want defense elves or did you want offense elves? Because especially once Games Workshop decided that all elves would be always strikes first and have M prowess, which they ruined with wood elves, by the way. Fuck you guys. That was one of our internet soothsaying where I predicted incorrectly.
Also. Well, yeah, you were like musical prowess. I was like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, man. That sounds
well. I was I was assuming wood elves would play the same that they were, and then musicians give you a plus one because it's not like you have ranks. Mm-hmm. And then they were just like, we shit on wood elves as they are. Go fuck yourself.
Exactly.
We're Games Workshop. Drop the mic. But yeah, I mean, like high elves and dark elves. I mean, in the sixth edition books, they were literally the same army. Down to the name and the paint scheme.
Right.
And then they tried to make things different, but then again, and that worked for a little bit when high elves had always strikes first and dark elves didn't. But then when they're like, all elves get ASF, you're just like, and they're the same army again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fantastic.
I think it comes down to, you know, you don't go to a, let's say you don't go to a Gap if you shop at the Gap, and buy like one of each style of shirt. Like, no. I'm sure there's people out there who that works for, but people kind of know what they like. And eventually you get to a point where you say, right, there just aren't enough people who like this, right? There are people out there who play Tomb Kings. They like them. It's their favorite army. But there's enough out there.
And I mean, I like the idea of Tomb Kings. But even if we look at the Nagash and the Undead Legions, I could play Tomb Kings using Undead Legions rules and then cherry pick the one or two vampire count units that I might want or that might still fit. So, I mean, it's not in it, because, I mean, like, yeah, Tomb Kings play differently, and I think that's the interesting thing, is whereas High Elves and Dark Elves were the same army,
right.
Tomb Kings and Vampire Counts were night and day.
Quite different.
Yeah, they both were undead and thus had the undead rules, but holy shit, they did not play similarly at all. So yeah, there are people, myself included, that like how Tomb Kings play. That's great. It being out of print, we know we're going to get a unified undead book.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to look like? Who the fuck knows? Like, who the fuck knows what 9th edition fantasy is going to bring? But again, just like when Nagash first came out, I'm excited about fantasy for the first time in a really, really long time. So, I mean, bring on 9th edition. I think that'll be the first time you and I play fantasy in 3 years.
More than likely. no, I mean, how do I feel about it being out of print? Again, I'm totally fine with it. I don't have a problem with it. I'm not one of those people who gets really upset about the idea that they might remove an army or change an army or something like that.
I've been saying Dark Elves, Dark Angels, and Blood Angels should be fucking zotted out of existence for years.
That's right. Throw them into a mirror. Hurl that mirror into space so that they scream forever until
a
bomb happens.
Dark Angels have chapter traits, Dark Angels. You're stubborn. Go fuck yourself.
And go.
Blood Angels have Furious Charge. Go fuck yourself. And we're done. That's all you
need. I mean, you can still do stuff, but we don't need the flying DJ booth. It just, there's so much about the way that Games Workshop has dug themselves into a hole that we haven't really talked about yet. We talked about it years ago, near the beginning of the podcast, when we were saying that there's just no way for them to get through every single book in a year or even in an edition. And we thought this year would be the year for sure. Oh man, just wait. This is, they started out so well. But they ended, they completely ground to a halt because it just wasn't working. I'm sure that the plan originally was that we will grind through every single one of these books, and then we're going to have every single army book for 8th edition. And we got really far into that. However, it just didn't work. They completely stopped at one point because they realized that there was just no reason to do it, and it just doesn't make sense for a company to build such a long-term strategy that's built around the idea that gamers will never change.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's the thing is, I predicted it when Games Workshop started with that every month's a new release, because it was about every 3 to 5 weeks we were getting a new thing. As I said, it's not really sustainable, and they're really just trying to see. They're trying to see what the sales numbers look like. And they did it for a year, and they saw that the sales numbers weren't better. They might have been worse, they might have been whatever, but it's just like, if it had improved across the board, we would still be seeing releases at that frequency. But we haven't seen a fantasy release since Wood Elves, and that was, what, August?
Yeah. No, Wood Elves was earlier than August.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought...
But that would have been after, yeah, somewhere around there.
Late summer, early fall is the last fantasy, like, army we've seen. I mean, yeah, the end times are great. We're getting new model kits. We're getting rules. It's great. But in terms of armies, we still don't have 8th edition Bretonnia. We still don't have 8th edition Skaven. And I doubt that the end times Horned Rat, Rise of the Horned Rat, or whatever title they're going with, the Thankful and Bone Ripper ones, is not going to be a Skaven book rewrite. And we don't have Beastmen, despite getting Glotkin. So it's just like, we're not getting new fantasy armies, which again, just reinforces that idea of 9th edition's going to drop, they're going to cut the number of armies down dramatically. Rumor has it that dwarfs are getting rolled into humans as just like, quote-unquote, the survivors. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be like, all humans, Bretonnian Empire, and dwarves are just going to be in this one book.
Right.
And if that's the case, sorry, dwarf players, because, like, if you're a dwarf player, you fucking love dwarves, and...
It is the only way to play dwarves, because everyone else doesn't care.
And they just don't understand, man. They don't understand how good dwarves are. Sorry if, like, your army is literally going by the wayside. Hopefully you'd still be able to run a pure dwarf list, but like I said, again, that's the rumor that we have, is dwarfs are going to get cut, they're just going to get folded into, quote-unquote, the survivors. And again, I think that's probably the biggest reason why we have not seen any fantasy releases, and then Games Workshop's like, well, we can't release nothing for this year, so why don't we release the end times to start moving the fiction forward so people will understand what's happening in this world, and it's not going to be like, surprise, 9th edition, the world's destroyed, motherfuckers.
Well, I don't necessarily agree on the point of the idea that it wasn't successful as a whole. I think when they first started, it was successful. They did all the big books. They put it out in such a way that the stuff that was getting released was interesting. You know, we were seeing the re-release for Ogres, and, you know, we saw Empire and Orc and Goblins, Warriors of Chaos, all that kind of stuff. And they were all good releases. I think as they were getting to the end of the line, however, is when things really started to drag, when it was Wood Elves and Dwarves, even like High Elves and Dark Elves at that time was kind of like the last hurrah. When we were talking about the Dwarves, we had said like how dull and like the missed opportunities here, and they were not able to come up with good ideas for the book. I think they just ran dry, and then that killed the sales for it. Because if there had been more interesting stuff in the dwarf release, we probably would have seen bigger sales, and maybe this would have kept going.
But possibly. But the other thing is,
That's all I'm saying is possibly, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I don't think it's just they tried it didn't work, so they quit.
Well, I mean, yes or no, it's been ruled and ruined. Pick your R word. By the bean counters for a decade now. It could just be like, we're going to try doing this because people keep talking about how we don't release enough, so now we're going to release fucking everything.
But like I said, they never found a middle ground, and that was always the problem.
It really was, because they went from, we're going to release one fantasy book to every 4 months and one 40K book every 3 months to, like, every 3 weeks. And you're just like, whoa, guys, you know, every 2 months, like, six a year is good, you know? Six a year.
That.
Yeah, we would hail you as fucking gods if you gave us six books a year. Like, that's all we need.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, for me, what I think it is, especially when we start to get to the end, like, the last few books from, because you brought up a good point with dwarfs. Dwarfs were super bland. I won't say bland. They're not 40K bland, but just a lot of missed opportunities. Instead of getting a really interesting thing. Yeah, but
helicopters were dumb.
Listen, the helicopters were idiotic and they were stupid. But even when I look at the dwarf book, I look at dwarfs and I'm like, I could do a dwarf army. I could not do a guard army. I could not do a Tyranid army because of the fact that they are so much more bland. But anyway, dwarfs were super missed opportunities, but we know that Games Workshop additions are usually 2 to 3 years up. So if we have a May 2015, it means that in 2012, they were already talking about it. Mm-hmm. So by the time that dwarf book was coming around, they probably knew what 9th edition was going to look like. They knew that it was going to be fucking drastic. And they were already probably talking about eliminating dwarves entirely. So if you're in that position as a company, do you really release a book for an army you know you're killing in 2 to 3 years? That's going to be super awesome, or do you release something for the dwarf players in the meantime?
But that's what they did for, like, Bretonnia and Beastmen and, you know.
Listen, we haven't had a Bretonnia or Beastmen book in years.
But that's what I'm saying, right? Like, this isn't just about, oh, what's coming down the pipe. That also assumes that there's effective communication happening at that company. Between the people creating the games and the people who are part of the IP, as we've heard from various authors, that they don't give a shit. Nobody really says anything to anybody, where I think it was Aaron had said, like, I was writing a book, and then I went and talked to this guy, and he's like, oh, it was Matt Ward, and he's like, oh, yeah, I went and I changed all this stuff.
He didn't even get a chance to talk to Matt Ward, as he wrote the Grey Knights book, and then the Grey Knight Codex dropped and completely destroyed everything Aaron had written, forcing him to start again from scratch, because why the fuck would a Games Workshop design authors talk to you? You're just on contract.
Right, exactly.
Like, I was talking with Graham, and he was saying that, like, even though he is basically one of the premier Black Library authors, as far as Games Workshop's concerned, he's a third party. He can go die in a fire. They don't even give him codexes. Like, he's like, I have to buy my own codexes for, you know, out of pocket. And he's just like, as the principle of the matter, I choose not to. And I was like, yeah, I can get behind that. I would be in the exact same boat. Wait, so I have made you how many millions of dollars from the books that I have written in your universe, and you won't even toss me a codex? So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. A lot of these questions are really focused around 9th edition and kind of like, oh, what about this game? Or, oh, what about this? I'm going to go back now to Adam's question as the last question here. Adam said, here's another one. Should a game recreate a sense of simulation while playing, like flying ships in X-Wing or Star Trek? Yeah, this is a hard question because this is all about balance. You will always see people who will play a game like 40K and go, oh, man, yeah, this makes no sense. In a real firefight, you don't just fall on the ground. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's always somebody who will say, like, oh, no, if this is what they're shooting, there's no way this armor could protect them. So it being a simulation is never, ever going to happen, because simulations, like true simulations, are not fun. They're super, super hard.
Yeah,
and
just
terrifying.
Just go play Flight
die.
Simulator.
Right. Well, again, like, anybody who's ever been in a legit flight simulator is like, no, it's fucking impossible. Like, you have to train to become a pilot. It's not just, it doesn't just happen overnight. You don't just become a fighter pilot and understand things like aerodynamics, avionics, and things of that nature. No, you go play War Thunder because you can do it with a mouse and keyboard, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So
You mean all games aren't like Galaga?
Right.
Shit. Like, an actual...
Since when?
FF18 is not like Galaga? This is bullshit. No, and I mean, I think the problem is games, like, video games can be simulators. And there is a market for that. I mean, there is literally a road construction simulator game out there. This exists. You can Google it. It's it's fucking crazy.
Yep. There's also Euro Truck Simulator.
Farm Equipment Simulator. There are so many simulators. And, you know, when it comes to video games, this will appeal to certain people. I mean, shit, I still remember Steel Battalion on the Xbox. And that, for those of you who...
Max Immersion.
This was a game where you piloted a giant mech and you had the peripheral of three pedals on the ground and a 80-button cockpit-style joystick in front of you. Now, I never owned
John
the
Kingsway
game.
John Kingsway bought one.
I never owned the game, but at the time, just a short walk from my house or my apartment on White, there was they were attempting to be like an internet cafe, but with console games. So they had it. Of course they had it. And I played it a lot and it was fucked. Like, it was fun in a way, but it was just like the first time you'd start off, it's just like you're reading the instruction manual because your mech has a startup sequence. And if you don't do your startup sequence, you don't start the engine, you don't do all of this and go whatever. So it's just, you can't move. So you're reading the thing, all right, I got my startup sequence. And you're walking around, it starts raining. Well, which one of these fucking buttons is the windshield wipers? Because I need to turn these on. And it's just like, it was fun the first five times. And then after that, you're just like, it's totally a gimmick. I cornered too fast and my mech fell over. And I have to restart the level. That's bullshit. Like, there's such bullshit. And I think that's the thing with simulators. There are segments of the population that will truly enjoy games like that, but I do not feel like any board game or miniature game can truly capture that feeling of a simulation, be it X-Wing, Star Trek, or whatever. I think the closest a board game has ever come is Space Cadets, and even that is turning everything into like this absurd little mini game that lasts 30 seconds.
I think when it comes to recreating that sense of simulation, for me, it's about the visual sense of simulation only. Especially when it comes to things like X-Wing or Star Trek. One of the reasons why I particularly like Star Trek over X-Wing was because the scale and because the idea of like, oh, here's what this, you know, these scenes would happen in the shows or the movies. Mm-hmm. In the movies, you never see two X-Wings fighting against four TIE fighters and then that's the end of it. It's always, hey, no, here's these wings.
Listen, Lang, it is two Slave Ones fighting against two Slave Ones.
That's correct, yes.
Or
that's...
two Slave Ones fighting against the Millennium Falcon and an X-Wing, okay?
And an X-Wing.
Have you walked past
and
an X-Wing
Luke's
table?
X-Wing. Oh, I've seen him. That's, again, the game holds no interest to me whatsoever because I've seen people playing it and it's just like, so everybody just uses these, huh? Yep. Okay, then. But I mean, hey, we got Borg cubes in Star Trek, so what can we say? Really, what it really comes down to is if you're able to visually create a style that I find to be in keeping with the theme of the game. So for Star Trek, the ships are not exact scale, but they're close enough that we can kind of go, oh, okay, sure. Then perfect. If you're able to say, oh, okay, here's kind of how this ship would work. Here's how it would turn. These are more maneuverable than these. Okay, sure, fine. I play Eve. And one of the things that anybody who plays Eve knows about Eve is that the level of detail and the amount of information that you need to absorb in order to truly understand how this game works is enormous. I've been playing the game almost since it started. I think it was about a year after it started when I started playing. I play on and off throughout the year. But it's one of those games where I had to play it for 2 years before I finally clicked. And I was like, oh, my God, that's why. That's why I suck. But that's why Eve is its own thing. And everybody who doesn't play Eve scoffs at it. And the people who play it fucking love it.
Oh, no. I mean, I don't – like, for me, Eve is just – like, Eve is intimidating. Like, that's the thing is, I'm like, I totally get why people love it.
Eve does not have a learning curve. It has a learning cliff with sharp rocks at the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, that's the thing where I'm just like, I can absolutely look at it and just be like, I totally get why people love it, and part of that appeals to me, but this is not for me.
Well, not to mention the fact that it is one of the most punishing games in the sense that, oh, you lost your ship, huh? Man, that sucks. Oh, you don't have any other way to make money, huh? Yeah, that really sucks. It's one of those things where, like, you'll be, I remember one of the first times I was playing, I got a battleship, and I was like, fuck yeah, I got my first battleship. I'm going to go out into low security sectors to kill the big NPCs and get the bigger bounties, and then I'll make more money. So I fly out into the low security sectors, and, like, my battleship gets solo killed by a frigate.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't, it locked me down, I couldn't shoot it, I did no damage, I couldn't understand why I couldn't do any damage, and he just picked me apart for, like, it was a good 12 minutes of just agonizing defeat, of just watching my battleship melt. and then after the battleship was destroyed, I didn't get out in time and he potted me. Now, if I didn't know how to play the game, I could have lost everything I'd trained up until that point, because if you don't have a backup of your clone, you're fucked. So it's one of those games where, like, I get it. I love that immersion now. I'm in that position. But there's not a lot of games in terms of tabletop that you want to have that level. I don't want to have to play a game like 40K for 2 years before it finally clicks. I want to be able to play 3-4 games and go, ah, okay, I get it. Get into the list building, have some fun. You know, we always say, you know, it needs to be, you know, easy like chess, but also, complex, easy to learn, hard to master. Like, that's what it has to be. Not insanely hard to learn and you'll never master it. Mm. So, for stuff like this in terms of simulation, it's all about the visual style for me, especially in games like this. But I build a lot on aesthetics. Maybe more than I should when it comes to games like this. Maybe that was what drew me to Firestorm, you know?
You know, and that's funny, because when you suckered me into Firestorm, most of the ships sucked.
Mm.
I was drinking. No, totally. But I mean, like, that's the thing, is you're just like, yeah, I love aesthetics. And I was like, really? Those aesthetics? Because, I mean, like, when you look at the models that Spartan has for Firestorm now, holy shit, they blow you away. And I mean, like, Firestorm, Planetfall, like, they're just knocking it out of the park with every single release. And then you go back to those really awful Mark I Terrans and Andrenzi and Aquins, and it just, they're all shit.
The only one I don't like from the original range is the Mark I Andrenzi. I still even enjoyed the Seashells. I didn't mind Ceruleans quite so much. I had no interest in the Ralthosa, but I didn't hate them. So, I mean, like, you know, there was a reason why I didn't have a whole lot of competition when it came to Directorate, because nobody liked the Directorate models. I was, like, the only person who actually liked Directorate.
Oh, I know, and the fact that they keep changing the aesthetic of Directorate to streamline them and give it a mass appeal you hate. Like, you're just why are you doing this?
Why are they not saucers anymore? I don't want ovals. What the fuck's wrong with you? Oh, man. But, yeah, it's funny because, like, that's one of the things that I build on more than anything else in terms of stuff like this. But, actually, I think that Adam's question would be a great weekly listener poll. I'd like to hear what people have to say about this. So the weekly listener poll for this week is, should a game recreate a sense of simulation while playing, like flying ships in X-Wing or Star Trek? So you can find that at jadedgamercast.com. That's the question that we have for you guys. Oh, that was a good mailbag. I think that worked out.
Yeah, we're kind of all over the place. I mean, I think 9th edition fantasy is going to be on everyone's mind and what everyone's going to be talking about for the next few months until it finally drops and we see what the game looks like.
Well, I get this weird sense in my gut that it's going to be like a car accident that you're driving past. Everybody will slow down for a second and rubberneck and, like, just look at it and just go, oh, man. And then they'll be past it, and they'll be back to whatever they were doing before. I just worry. I worry that it's going to be exactly like that.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. As I said, I'm excited to play 9th edition when it drops, and it'll probably be the only games of 9th we – or the first games of fantasy. and the only games of Ninth we play in years. Like, that's the thing where I'm just like, I'm excited to try it. I'm excited to play it. I'm excited to see everything that these changes and the end times are going to bring forth. But at the end of the day, is this going to be enough to pull me in? No, I don't really think it is. I mean, I'm busy. Like, I have, like, Games Workshop has pretty much lost me because I have other games that I would rather play every single time, whether it be D&D, whether it be Firestorm Armada, whether it be Planetfall.
Strange Aeons. I mean, you can basically go down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing where it's just like 9th edition would literally have to be the greatest miniature game in the history of miniature games for it to have that pull and me just be like, yeah, this is worth me dropping one of these other games that I enjoy to make the time to build and paint and play this. And I just don't think it's capable of living up to that.
No. No, it absolutely won't be because of the fact that they're not creating a new model range. And that is always going to be the biggest...
Well, supposedly they are.
Well, yeah, but they're also supposedly not getting rid of Beastmen. You'll still be able to use all your old models, and it's all going to remain on the shelf, yada yada, for at least, you know, probably the first year of 9th edition, before they eventually just stop making it and there's just no more on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily think that they're absolutely phasing anything else. I think that would be a far too bold a move for Games Workshop to just be like, ah, you know what, Bretonnia are done. We're taking them off the shelves. We're no longer selling the books. Here's the rules if you feel like using them, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I just don't think that will ever happen. They will try to sell through their existing stock. They will be no longer supported, and that'll be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lion.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.